Of course, to the layman, all this was unknown. The mainstream position, as understood by most people, was that the effects of radium were all positive, and that was what was written about in newspapers and magazines, championed across product packaging and performed on Broadway. Nonetheless, the lab workers in von Zahotsky's plant in Orange were provided with protective equipment. Lead-lined aprons were issued, along with ivory forceps for handling tubes of radium. In January 1921, von Zahotsky would write that one could handle radium only by taking the greatest precautions. Yet despite this knowledge and the injury to his own finger, von Zahotsky was apparently so transfixed by radium that all reports say he took little care. He was known to play with it, holding the tubes with his bare hands while watching the luminosity in the dark, or immersing his arm up to the elbow in radium solutions. Company co-founder George Willis was also lax, picking up tubes of radium with his forefinger and thumb, not bothering with forceps. Perhaps understandably, their colleagues learned from them and copied what they did. No one heeded the warnings of Thomas Edison, working just a few miles away in sight of the Orange plant, who once remarked, "There may be a condition into which radium has not yet entered that would produce dire results. Everybody handling it should have a care." Yet in the sunny second floor studio, the girls working there had not a care in the world. Here there were no lead aprons, no ivory-tipped forceps, no medical experts. The amount of radium in the paint was considered so small that such measures were not deemed necessary. The girls themselves, of course, had no clue that they might even be needed. This was radium, the wonder drug they were using. They were lucky, they thought, as they laughed among themselves and bent their heads to their intricate work. Grace and Irene, Molly and Ella, Albina and Edna, Hazel and Catherine and May. They picked up their brushes and they twirled them over and over, just as they had been taught. Lip. Dip. Paint. Chapter 3. Wars are hungry machines, and the more you feed them, the more they consume. As the fall of 1917 wore on, demand at the factory showed no signs of slowing. At the height of operations, as many as 375 girls were recruited to paint dials. And when the firm announced it needed more women, the existing workers eagerly promoted the job to their friends, sisters, and cousins. It wasn't long before whole sets of siblings were sat alongside each other, merrily painting away. Albina and Molly Maggia were soon joined by another sister, 16-year-old Quinta. She was an extremely attractive woman with large grey eyes and long, dark hair. She considered her pretty teeth her best feature. She was down to earth and kind, and her favourite pastimes included card games, checkers and dominoes. She also confessed cheekily, "I don't go to church half as often as I should." She hit it off brilliantly with Grace Fryer, and the two became inseparable. Grace was another who brought her little sister to work. Adelaide Fryer adored the social side of it, being a very gregarious girl who loved to be around people, but she wasn't quite as sensible as her big sister. In the end, she was fired for talking too much. The girls may have been sociable, but they still had a job to do. And if they didn't knuckle down and do it, they were out.